Welcome back to the program. It is an honor to be in conversation with one of my heroes, Paul Ehrlich. He and his wife, Anne, wrote a book a couple of years ago. I want to mention, in case you missed it, it's called One with Nineveh, came out in 2005. It's Politics, Consumption, and the Human Future. This is someone who's been looking at our human future for long enough to perhaps have a sense of where we're headed now at this very, very critical moment, although I suppose it's felt that way before. Never so before now has it felt so urgent and that we could go either way. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think the reason that ecologists and scientists feel urgent is I think there are a lot of people who think that if we decide, for example, on the energy situation, that wind power is the way to go, that Congress could pass a law and in a couple of years we'd have all our power from wind. Actually, it would take 40 or 50 years probably. In other words, there's huge lag times involved in a lot of things we're doing. And also, as many people don't seem to understand, climate may not be the most serious of our environmental problems. It is a very serious one, but there's others connected to it which may turn out to be much more serious. Land use change, the deterioration of our epidemiological environment, that is our continuing population-related vulnerability to brand new epidemics of the AIDS sort, the loss of biodiversity, which are the working parts of our life support systems, without which we would have no economy and basically no humanity. And that, of course, is partially connected to climate change, but land use change is just as large. The toxification of the planet, that is, we're releasing huge numbers of toxic chemicals. And there's suspicious signs that they're beginning to affect us with signs like drops in sperm counts in some places, more developmental defects, and there could be, again, as often in environmental problems, thresholds for things called that scientists call nonlinearities that could bring some of those to the fore very, very rapidly. So the knowledgeable scientific community is extremely nervous about the directions we're going and what that means for the future of civilization.
You've been working closely with Dr. Gretchen Daly?
Indeed. She is, I think, the leading environmental scientist who's under 60 in the world today. She's absolutely brilliant.
So are you. Brilliant, if not under 60.
But I mean, let me just mention, how many Americans know that we still have thousands of nuclear missiles aimed at Russia and vice versa, and that in 1996 we almost had an accidental launch from Russia because their command and control system is in such bad shape? In other words, one of the environmental problems we could have, as was recently published, is a nuclear winter, not even necessarily from an exchange between U.S. and Russia, but just of one between, say, Pakistan and India. It could end our civilization. People don't understand what we're playing with.
That's exactly right. And short of that, we have these environmental problems. That would be the one thing that would make them all null and void.
That's right. Well, of course, one could say they're part of the environment. When we did the nuclear winter stuff, it became clear that they're basically an environmental problem, too, because you lost so much crap so far up in the stratosphere that you wreck your agricultural system, among other things. So that that's the ultimate environmental problem.
One of the things you research and write about is cultural evolution, especially with respect to environmental ethics. How are we evolving as a culture?
Well, the problem is, if you think about it for a minute, our culture is our non-genetic information. That's the things that's not in our genes. And in one area, we've been evolving incredibly rapidly, just in my lifetime. I mean, look at the technologies that have come in since I was born in 1932. My mother just died at 100. And, you know, she started out in 1907 when automobiles were a rarity. Now we have computers, jet aircraft, nuclear weapons. So in that area of our cultural evolution, we've been moving incredibly rapidly. But if you know anything about ethical considerations, the things that worry you and me tended to worry people like Plato and Aristotle. In other words, we've been moving very slowly in our ethics about how we treat each other and how we treat our environment. That area of cultural evolution has been very, very slow. We're still killing each other.
And yet environmental degradation is moving anything but slowly.
That's right. In other words, one of the things that's moved me and my colleagues into cultural evolution rather than the science is the mismatch between what we understand about what we should do and what we actually are capable of doing. I mean, George Bush may be nowhere near as corrupt and stupid as some of our past presidents, but he's certainly the worst president because he's got the power to destroy the world. Somebody like Millard Fillmore or someone didn't have that power. Didn't
exactly
matter how bad he was.
Well, it's what Al Gore talks about in Convenient Truth, about we have the technology now that can be a lot more damaging.
That's right.
So what keeps you awake at night, or are you so used to living, you know, with this dire scenario that you do
you
sleep well?
Listen, in this world, you've got to keep your sense of humor. I do that by, you know, occasionally tuning to the Fox Channel or, so, you know, one of the amusement channels that are just terrific. If I want to really enjoy myself, I listen to Ann Coulter. There's a lot of funny stuff around. But
not so funny, really, because they get a lot of play, and those guys are making tons of money, too.
Yeah, that's true. I'm of course, being cynical, but we do try and keep our sense of humor. But it is very depressing. You know what's most depressing? It's when I'm around kids.
Mm-hmm.
Gretchen Daly has two absolutely beautiful children. A whole number of my other younger colleagues have wonderful kids. You know, they're 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. And what do they know about the legacy we're leaving them? We're working a lot, by the way, our group with economists now, with some of the best economists of the world, with Ken Arrow as a Nobel Prize and Partha Dasgupta, who's the president of the European Economic Association, and so on. And one of the big issues is how we treat the future generations. In other words, what are our ethical responsibilities to future generations? That, for example, may be much poorer than we are. What should we be doing to try and enrich their lives? And when you look at young kids, when you look at your children or grandchildren, it's their world that we're screwing up. I mean, you know, I've had my run, but I really feel for the youngsters, for my own grandchildren who are now going to have my great-grandchildren soon. I just hate the world we're leaving them.
I couldn't agree more. As a mother of a 12-year-old daughter, every time I want to quit this, because needless to say, it's not been economically rewarding to host the nation's only green show that has gone from weekly to daily on a network that has gone bankrupt and a few other challenges along the way. I can't walk away from this. And what kind of job do you think the media has done to really connect the dots for Americans?
Well, not a good job at all, but I don't think it's the fault of the people at the front lines, particularly the reporters, as much. It's pressures from elsewhere, and it's the whole idea that all Americans want is pap. I mean, it's sort of, we've gone the same way in the media as the junk food industry has gone, and to a degree, it's because people have no power to change things and don't really realize what's at stake. I wish the media, I mean, I'm a member of the Society of Environmental Journalists. I have been a correspondent for NBC News. I know what the media can do, but I've also watched from inside how it works. I hate to tell you what happened when I worked for the Today Show. I can't say it in public, but it's basically...
Oh, come on, just between us.
Well, just between us and your listeners, Today Show was basically wrecked by one the wife of one of the big executives who didn't like one of the better people who was running the show, one of the best people on the air, as a matter of fact. And the whole thing ended up in the hands of about a 27-year-old who knew nothing about anything. And that was the end of it. But we had really good people, good cameramen. I had a superb, a absolutely superb producer named Sam Hurst, who I'm still in touch with. We're still friends. He finally quit in disgust and is buffalo ranching in, while doing some TV, buffalo ranching in South Dakota.
Were you covering the Green Beat while you were doing it?
We were doing, you know, it took about 3 months to do one, but we were doing 4 or 5 minute bits on things like the impacts of cattle ranching, what was going to happen in China, you know, all sorts of things. But of course, that all ended when the show changed. The same thing when I was on the Tonight Show. Carson was dramatically interested in all the kinds of issues we've been talking, and he had the clout in Hollywood to get me on his show. The people in the TV industry didn't like it, but Carson was so powerful, he just said, I don't care whether you like it or not, we're going to do this stuff. And we did. I did.
Okay.
I had about 20 shows with him.
Good for you. I missed that. I'm sorry. We have a couple of minutes left. I have to ask you, so what do you think of this resurgence? All of a sudden, the green rush is on. Everybody wants to get green, and even trickling down to the mainstream media. Is this the real thing, or is this just another American trend?
People don't realize what getting green really has to mean. It really means we have to change our society. It's not everybody buying a Prius. It's, first of all, gradually reducing the size of our population, because most of us can't see with anything like the consumption patterns that people seem to desire, keeping even 6.5 billion people going for long. Gretchen Daly led a group that looked at the issue of, you know, with anything like current standards, how many people can you sustain permanently on the planet? It came out to be about the number when I was born. And but when that paper was done, what we looked at was the issue of not just how many can you support in a sort of battery chicken mode with everybody just having the minimum food and the minimum everything, but how many could we support if people had a maximum of options so that there were big enough cities so people who loved opera and such could have that, and enough wilderness so that people who wanted to be alone could be alone as well. The number came out about 1.5 to 2 billion.
Okay, there's recent numbers out showing that America's young people, their primary goals are fame and fortune. Is there any hope for us?
Yeah, I think there's hope because we're an incredibly adaptable species. And a lot of the responsibility really rests with the media because people aren't reading that much anymore. And the media doesn't have to be solid pap and solid, who was the father of which celebrity's baby. There are other things in the world. It's not that stuff, human beings are curious and we're gossipy, and I'm not saying you shouldn't have that sort of stuff.
Just a little excessive.
There is no real analysis of the world situation from any point of view, but particularly from the environmental point of view.
That's right. And when you get an environmental show like EcoTalk and the network wants me to pay for it because it's still considered kind of a fringe, not quite mainstream topic, we're still not there.
Well, you ought to go into promoting the next war. After all, that's what the media did for Iraq.
And we're in it deep, and that's all everyone seems to talk about, at least on a couple of networks. But
We're there for oil. Should we be trying
it's
to get
all connected.
More oil to
exactly.
burn to ruin the climate?
Exactly.
I mean, give me a break.
Exactly. It's all connected. And that's what we cover environment. We mean it in the broadest sense. It's connected to
survive.
Health, economy. Thank you.
Survive.
Thank you. And I hope you sound like you're going strong. Are you going to retire anytime soon, or can we count
plans.
On you?
No plans. You're going to have to carry me out feet first.
God bless you, Paul Ehrlich. Now, if we have to go off the air, we can because we have interviewed one of my biggest heroes. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Paul Hawken the other day, Paul Ehrlich today, but I hope we can stay on.
I miss Paul. Take care.
Okay, take care yourself.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back right after these messages with more EcoTalk.